It's gadget time. It's all things internet and beyond. Gadget detective Fevzi Türkalp returns to us. If you want to follow him, by the way, he has his own podcast. It's free at gadgetdetective.com or via the five-letter word that is a lady's name that you ask to do things in your house these days, or Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts or Spotify or many other such platforms. Hello, Fevzi.
Hello.
Delighted to have you with us once again. We'll start, shall we, with your tech story of the week. And it's finally come then. Completely self-driving cars, taxis in China, to be precise, or not quite.
So it can do the job. They're going to do the trials of it next year.
Right.
There's quite a lot of hesitancy about this. It's not so much technological as human fear and legal. But let's deal with it. So the Chinese tech giant called Baidu has announced a new self-driving car. It's called the Apollo RT6, and it claims it's got the road skills of a driver of 20 years experience, which I would argue is worse than the road skills of a driver with 5 years experience, actually.
Absolutely, but there we are. Right. Yes. We should have some kind of refreshment system, shouldn't we? And we don't in this country, or many countries don't have it, and they should.
Yeah, there's kind of a sweet spot.
Yeah, there is.
About, I don't know, 5 years, 1 or 2 years after. Yeah. Well, yeah, a few years after we pass our test, a couple of years, and then after that, if you'll pardon the pun, it's all downhill. But so this is kind of interesting because they say it's fully roadworthy. It's got the skill of a 20 years experience driver behind the wheels. Interestingly enough, at the moment, the law says that there has to be a human in the driving seat and in front of the steering wheel. And by the way, the steering wheel is detachable because they expect.
Oh my God!
The law. Yeah, no, it's like one of those films, isn't it? When the steering
wheel
comes off in your hand, isn't it? Well, yeah, but it's actually meant to. But the point being, they said that when they detach the steering wheel when it's allowed, that will give space for extra seating, vending machines, desks or gaming consoles. So you can see how this is all going, because we're kind of not used to the idea. Mm. You can do what you would do in a taxi. It will just drive itself. The interesting thing about this, other than the technology, is that it's going to cost the equivalent of £31,000, which is not huge, and a lot less than a London taxi costs a black cab driver, for example.
Yeah, very true.
So you know, and that price will only ever come down. It's full of a shed load of technology: 38 sensors, 8 LiDAR sensors, which are light and light ranging. They're like radar with light. Yeah, it's got 1 actual radar on it, 12 ultrasonic sensors, and 12 cameras. So, I mean, gosh, you know, it will see a lot more than you do. I always think this is interesting, okay, because there's a number of things that are between where we are now and when all vehicles are self-driving. One is the technology. The technology is kind of almost there. We're kind of at the point where, you know, that it's still not absolutely there, but eventually, in not too distant future, it will be better than a human driver. You will not want to get into a cab with a human driver.
Yeah.
By the way, the cost, I mean, obviously the thing about this is a lot of cab drivers are going to be out of work, and the cost of these journeys could be halved because of that. Wow. You know, and that's why. So any company that says, oh well, we're going to keep human drivers, their fares are going to be so much higher, and who's going to do that? We've already seen that people vote with their feet with, you know, Uber and Lyft and companies like that.
Supposing one day, though, we're all going around and cars are driving themselves, and some wicked government or sad little person in their back bedroom manages to get into the system and make it all go wrong. Is that a real concern?
Absolutely. I mean, autonomous vehicles have already been hacked. And as have partly autonomous vehicles, it is possible to take control of a vehicle remotely. you know, but then again, everything is hackable. I mean, our NHS systems are hackable. Our life support systems are hackable. Our power grid is hackable. Mm. And this is part of the issue, that all this technology, virtually none of it is homegrown.
Yes.
And we're reliant upon it. And that was a big deal with 5G and the government telling BT and others that they cannot use certain Chinese companies for core infrastructure in the 5G network. And the fear is twofold in that case. One is that it can be hacked and listened in on, so government and other communications can be bugged. And the other thing is that they could just throw the kill switch on us. And you know, a conflict with China probably is coming. You know, the Russian conflict is small by comparison to that. And I'm not sure that, you know, a war with China would be conventional. I suspect they'll just turn the lights off on us, literally and figuratively.
Should we be adding more things then to, you know, okay, we've already got, you know, we've got to the stage where life support machines are already operating this way. We don't have to keep adding things to that list, though, do we?
I think never in human history has something that we can invent not been invented, and then having been invented not been used, and that goes all the way through to nuclear weapons. Yeah, it's human nature. And the thing is, unless you have a moratorium on development of AI systems, because this is a robot, effectively. It's a robot in the shape of a car. But it's artificially intelligent and all the rest of it. The problem is, if you, in a commercial sense, if you say, okay, we're going to stay with the existing technology, that's fine, but then your competitors will put you out of business. In a military sense, it's the same thing. If you say, okay, we're not going to have, you know, self-targeting drones that target human targets themselves and kill without human intervention, but then, you know, your enemy has an army of robot soldiers. What's going to happen? You've failed to defend your country. So you have, just as we had a nuclear arms race, we have an AI robotics
you
arms
just
race
can't
commercially
get off the bus.
And military.
Yeah.
You can't. And I'll just throw one more thing at you, if I may. One of the other things that's holding all this up, and one of the most interesting things for me, is what algorithms you put in it, what decision-making algorithms do you put in it when it's in a position, for example, where a crash is unavoidable? Because you can drive perfectly well, but through someone else's error or other circumstances, a crash is unavoidable. So you have to make a decision. A human being makes a decision. Do they hit? Do they swerve? Now, you could hit a person in the street, you could hit three people in the street, or you could swerve up onto the curb and kill one person. Okay, what is the correct and what is the moral thing to do? Add a tier, and someone's got to program this, but you add a tier to that, okay? Because with a human driver, that's a split-second decision. You don't know anything about the people that you're either hitting or not hitting. An AI system with facial recognition and access to online databases could identify the individuals. It could work out that someone is old. It could work out that someone has got cancer. It could work out that someone is a criminal. It could work out that someone is the president of the United States, and make certain judgments accordingly. Judgments that human beings don't really have to make. We kind of do, but it's not programmed. But with a machine, you have to make those decisions. And, you know, these are moral questions that are going to become very, very difficult. And finally, when a self-driving vehicle crashes, who is responsible?
Let's leave that one hanging in the air. Clearly, there is so much more to this even than the miracle of a car driving itself. That is just the starting point, And here comes the gadget of the week, and it's a smart projector, probably a lot smarter than the Chad Valley projector I had when I was 8 years old, that you put little strips of cardboard with little pictures through, and you had to watch the same story over and over again in six still images. But we were happy in those days, weren't we?
Yes. And it's, you know, it's just the same principles, but just a little bit better
than
that.
A little bit cleverer, yeah.
So two gadgets of the week. So I will be brief. So the first gadget of the week is the Anker Nebula Solar Portable. It's a projector. It's a smart projector in the same way that you get smart TVs that can stream all sorts of internet content. This can do the same. You don't have to pair a smartphone to it in the way that you do with a dumb TV. It's actually got the gubbins of a smartphone built into it. It's actually running a version of the Android operating system, so you can just download into the device YouTube, Netflix app, Amazon Prime Video, Disney Plus, BBC iPlayer, Apple TV, all of those sorts of things, plus a whole load of games as well. So same as a smart TV, it's a smart projector. But it's also portable, not just because of the size, and it is small. If anyone knows how big a Mac Mini is, this is almost exactly the same. It's about 7.5 inches square and just over 2 inches tall.
Very good.
So it's very portable. So yes, there's nothing to say you can't use it in the house, and you should. It's lovely projector, but you can, in these summer nights, you can take it out in the garden, project it on the side of your neighbor's house, much to their chagrin, or your own house if you're a better neighbor than I am, or you know, if you've gone camping on the side of a tent, you know, you can do it, those sorts of things. And unlike, so there are two versions of this, be careful. There is the Anker Nebula Solar and the Anker Nebula Solar Portable. This version has a built-in rechargeable battery, which will go for up to 3 hours on a single charge. So it really is, you know, portable. It's got a good pair of speakers on it, 2-3 watt speakers with a Dolby on them as well. In terms of the picture size, it can throw an image of up to 120 inch diameter. You know, from corner to corner.
That's big, isn't it? Yeah, it's very good.
It's huge. And it's a high dynamic range image. That's to say that the blacks are blacker and the whites are whiter. It sounds like a soap powder commercial, but that's what high dynamic range is. Reasonably bright lamp. All projectors will do best in dimmer conditions. If you try and use a projector in blazing sunlight, you know, just because it's called solar, it means you should charge it in the sunlight and then use it, you know, at dusk or something like that. But it's pretty good. It can be used as a Bluetooth speaker as well. As I mentioned, it's got Android 9 built into it, and it weighs 1.3 kilos. It really is, you know, it's a well-constructed machine. Yeah, you don't need a separate stand. It tilts up. You can still stream from your smartphone or tablet to it if you choose. It's got an HDMI connector on it. So if you've got, you know, if you want to connect it up to a DVD player or something like that, you can do that. Or even to your computer. You can do all of those things. So it's really rather nice. 4 stars out of 5. This price is £600. Currently selling for £530 either on Amazon or the website for this, although it's made by Anker, the website is called uk.cnebula.com, SWENebula.com. It's the same price at both, so you know, take your pick. Next gadget, if we have time.
Yes, that was the Anker Nebula Solar Portable Smart Projector. And yes, we just have time quickly for a keyboard this time.
Yeah, so this is a computer keyboard from Logitech. They are, I think, probably my favourite manufacturer. I think they make better keyboards than Apple. In fact, when I buy an Apple computer, I replace it with one of Logitech's. This is a kind of a different one. I'll explain why. It's called the MX Mechanical Mini. So MX relates to the fact that it can control, it's a whole series of keyboards and mice that they do that can control up to 3 different computers. So you could control the iPad, a Mac, and a Windows PC and just switch between them, and the mouse and the keyboard would go between them. And you can even drag and drop between screens, which is rather nice.
Yeah, good.
The Mini refers to the fact that although the keys are full size, the actual keyboard itself is compact. There's no numeric keypad, although there is a numeric keypad version if you want it. The interesting bit is the MX Mechanical Mini. It's got the traditional mechanical key switches on it. So most keyboards these days are what are called chiclet type keys. They're buttons rather than keys, rather like you get in a lift. You know, they have a little bit of travel, but not very much.
Right.
These are proper old-fashioned keys. They give you proper feedback. They have a, you know, good responsive click to them when you use them. Some people swear by them. Gamers love them, but a lot of people like these. So if you like that, you can have it. It's still backlit like a sort of more modern style keyboard. Charges with USB-C. You can get 15 days on a single charge, or if you don't use a backlight, up to 10 months. So it just shows how much the backlight uses. List price is £150-odd. It's currently selling most places at full price, but do hang around. It may come down. 4 stars out of 5, and it is the Logitech MX Mechanical Mini.
Well, that was all very succinct and very wonderful, and we will follow you at gadgetdetective.com, and you will return, I hope, in 7 days' time, Fevzy.
Cheers.
Talk to you then.